Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. 7,000 Texas kindergartners opted out of getting immunized this past year, according to a recent CDC study. Unsupported reports of immunizations causing problems have some parents concerned and having them thinking twice about having their children getting those shots. This leaves our children at risk for diseases that we thought we had conquered. Immunizations is one of the great advances in medicine. It has improved the quality of life and healthcare for most of the world's population. We'd like to try and make that 100% of the world's population. Joining me now to talk about childhood immunizations, Dr. Anil Mangla. He is the Assistant Director of Health at Metro Health, and Anna Dragsback. She's the President of Immunization Partnership. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. And also, we want to hear from our callers. If you've got questions about immunizations, if you decided to opt out, we really want to hear from you why you made that decision. Or if you're concerned if you're that a kid next to your kid at school opted out, what does that mean for you? Give us a call. The number is 614-8980. So I'm really interested, how is it that parents can have their kids opted out of getting an immunization? How is that possible? I thought it was no shots, no school. Dr. Mangla, can you talk about that?
Well, there's some waivers that actually occur, and the waivers would be a religious waiver. Then it would also be a medical waiver. And then the third one, it would be actually a just personal conviction waiver. So there's three different ways a parent can actually opt out with some of these vaccinations.
And so Anna Dragsback at the Immunization Partnership, is this a growing number or is this held steady? Dr. Mangla, can you talk about that a little bit? Has this been an ongoing problem?
Right. I think every state faces this, but the cases are almost minimum. You know, there was an excellent study done in Wisconsin by Dr. Schlenker in 2004, and they kind of really showed that when you look at these medical waivers, just 0.1% of the population, the rate, actually had medical waivers. And then if you look at religious waivers were 0.1%. When you look at a medical waiver, it was 0.4%. Now, some people are actually allergic to some type of vaccination, and that's not uncommon. So it's understandable that, you know, we have a large amount of diseases, almost 16 preventable diseases where we use vaccines, and an individual could be allergic to one or two. So the medical waiver is acceptable. But then you have the personal waivers, and I think that really clearly, when you look at a study, the study clearly says that this was associated normally with parents being really concerned about vaccines and the relationship to autism.
Now, let's just make clear that there are no peer-reviewed studies that back that up. This is just a conspiracy theory that exists in our media world, but there is no proof to back up that there is a connection between autism and getting immunizations. Is that right, Doctor?
Right. There is actually, when you look at scientific proof, there is absolutely no scientific proof to actually show that.
So I think we now have Anna Dragsback again. She's back on the air with the President of Immunization Partnership. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
So can you talk a little bit about how this myth is in our society about some connection between autism and immunization, even though it's unfounded, but how this is something that just doesn't want to go away, and it is a problem?
Well, it all started back in 1998 when there was an article published in The Lancet, which is a British medical journal, purporting to demonstrate a connection between autism and vaccines. Now, that study was widely disputed when it first came out, and as time went on, that study could not be replicated in any other environment where they tried to replicate it. Also, the joint authors withdrew their names from the publication. The author of the paper lost his medical license in the UK, and The Lancet withdrew the paper from their publication. So it was, quite roundly dismissed by the mainstream medical community. But that myth and that seed of doubt had already been planted, and that is still the battle we're fighting today and why many parents are concerned about the safety of vaccines. It is completely unfounded. We know conclusively that vaccines do not cause autism. There have been hundreds of studies demonstrating that vaccines are safe and effective. Mm-hmm. I think the way that we need to be thinking about this now is that we need to be pouring our research money into finding out what the true cause of autism is and encourage people to do the right thing and get immunized.
We're going to go to the phones, and our number is 614-8980, 614-8980. If you want to join the conversation, talk about your concerns about immunizations or questions about it. Jeff is on the line. Jeff, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I just wanted to weigh in. My contention, I did not have my daughter immunized. Actually, selectively, we didn't have our daughter immunized. Because it was the MMR vaccine, but in large part because of the evidence that suggested that thimerosal, which is a derivative of mercury, is a preservative in the MMR vaccine. And so we decided not to have our daughter immunized for MMR. But my contention is that I think that there's a conspiracy where the CDC or the NIH is forcing too many vaccines on our children before they're age 14. I think it's between 32 and 34 vaccinations that are required. And I only had 8 before I was 14 as a mandatory vaccination program. But I think that there's just, it's far too heavily weighted towards the pharmaceutical companies promoting and forcing vaccinations. So we opted against that.
So, Jeff, is your daughter in school?
My daughter is in public school. She actually starts, she was in public school for kindergarten, and she starts first grade on the 26th of August.
And did you have any problems getting her enrolled, even though that you did not get the immunizations done?
Honestly, no. We just needed a waiver signed by her pediatrician, and she's in school. So we were one of that small percentage that took the chance that we were going to be the ones that weren't going to vaccinate while everybody else did vaccinate.
Now, do you recognize that immunizations do prevent these diseases that we're concerned about?
Polio, and all that? It's not a
unwarrant
for the polio vaccinations. What weighed on our decision was the thimerosal and that mercury derivative. And we could not get a straight answer from any of the pediatricians that thimerosal was not being used, and that was our primary reason for not getting the MMR.
Okay, well, I wish you guys luck, and thank you for your call, and we'll see what our experts have to say about that. So, Dr. Mangla from the Metro Health, what's your reaction?
And thank you for your call, and I think, you're bringing up a good point, because the study that Anna actually talked about that was published in February 1998 actually looked at the link with regard to MMR and autism. But again, as Anna was saying, in these scientific studies, there needs to be, number one, transparency.
Right. We're going to come back to this. We want to pick up right where you left off. We got to take this quick break. We'll only be gone for a minute. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. No shots, no school. That's the rule. Maybe, there are people out there who are able to get, waivers, and they're not getting their children immunized. 7,000 Texas kindergartens opted out of immunizations this past year, according to the CDC. And so we just heard from a caller. He talked about his concerns and why he didn't have his daughter immunized. And so I want to go back to Dr. Anil Mangla. He's the assistant director at health at the Metro Health. And you were explaining why there were some flaws in his reasoning.
Yes. So when you looked at the study, any of the scientific studies you do require three important criteria. Number one is transparency. Number two is internal consistency of the data. And the key one here is reproducibility. None of this occurred in the study. And so that's the reason it was retracted. And,
He's talking about things like mercury and...
Right. So when we talk of MMR, we also looking at measles, mumps, rubella. And when we were looking at pre-vaccine era and looking at the most recent cases in the U.S., we've had almost 99% or even greater than 99% decrease in all these diseases, showing that it's clear that these vaccines work.
And it drags back when someone talks about all of these shots that our children are getting. There's so many of them. Why do they have to get them all at the same time? I've heard that complaint. Why is that not a problem?
It's not a problem because a baby's immune system can take it, quite frankly. Licking the slide at the playground, they probably get more germs and more harmful things in their body than they do with vaccines. We should be celebrating, quite frankly, we should be celebrating the fact that we can protect our children at their most vulnerable, at very, very early ages, against a whole array of very dangerous diseases that, quite frankly, our generation couldn't be protected from. I want to go back to something the caller talked about with thimerosal. There is a theory that thimerosal in vaccines can be linked to autism. However, that theory has also been disproven by the scientific literature. And in fact, thimerosal exists in no vaccines anymore except for the flu vaccine, some versions of the flu vaccine, I should say. And in fact, after we took the thimerosal out of vaccines, the autism rate continued to climb. So we also know that there is no causal effect between thimerosal and autism. So there's a lot of different theories out there about why vaccines might have an impact. They have been studied and dismissed. Vaccines are safe and effective.
So we're entering school right now, and is it still when you get your child vaccinated, a parent feels very vulnerable. They see the needle going in their child's arm or their leg if they're an infant. And of course, it makes you, you don't like that when you're a parent. But we have to overcome the natural instinct to protect your child from that, because we know intellectually that you're doing something better for your child in society. But this is a very vulnerable time, as a parent. So it seems like these theories and these suspicions and these conspiracy things that we hear, they hit home for us. I mean, is that why this doesn't go away, Anna?
I am a parent myself. I have held my children while they got immunized. It is not easy. I will agree with you there. It goes against our need to protect them and our instinct to protect them. We, of course, don't want our children to have any pain inflicted on them. But I think what it's really important to remember and to remind yourself as you're in that doctor's appointment with that child wriggling in your arms, that you are doing something to protect them against something far more dangerous and far more hurtful to them. I mean, what parent among us could bear the thought of the fact that we didn't immunize our child and they came down with something like pertussis or measles polio? My goodness, when we had the polio vaccine, when it first came out, parents were lining up around the block to get their kids immunized because they had seen just how devastating the disease is. And in fact, vaccines have been a product of their own success, a victim of their own success, because we don't see the diseases anymore. We perceive that the danger of vaccination is greater, when in actual fact, that's a false risk calculation. Vaccines are definitely way more important to get for your child to protect him or her than allowing them to be vulnerable to the diseases.
All right, let's go back to the phones. The number is 614-8980. Cynthia is on the line. Cynthia, you're on the air. You're on The Source.
Hi. I guess my comment or question is, where do we put our faith in the medical community for their own ethics? I mean, you have for years and years, fluoride being added to public water, and they've shown no link to, kids having healthier teeth and communities that have the fluoride added and those that don't. And then what was it, like a month ago, the FDA, or I forget who it was, comes out and says, okay, yeah, there is a link from overexposure to fluoride in the water to, lower IQs and also deficiencies in teeth. So, where do we place our faith when it seems you can't trust the ethics and the morals of the medical community to do their job properly when really they're just trying to make money?
Okay. Well, Cynthia, we will see what our experts have to say about that. But I don't know about this decreasing of IQ, because the charts I've seen is showing that IQs are continuing to rise in the United States. And so I don't know where you got that information from. And a drag spec, anything about fluoride in the water? I mean, that seems like another like the brother or the sister of the conspiracy about not getting your child immunized. It's another unfounded medical conspiracy.
In fact, I think that there is a lot of suspicion out there about other motives, but really I ask parents to consider the source of their information. And you can, I mean, anybody can write anything they want to on the internet, whether it's true or not. So I always encourage people to talk to your doctor. Your doctor is your best authority on what's best for you and your family. If you're going to go to the internet, go to trustworthy sites. Go to the CDC website.
Yeah, but that caller said that she doesn't trust you guys. There's this trust gap. We have this a whole industry out there that goes through this fear, distrust, uncertainty, and they're profiting from it as well.
And you're absolutely right about that. In fact, there is a huge industry out there for alternative medical treatments for autism. And, I mean, that is a huge concern to all of us, especially those of us in the immunization community, because we see these kids going through all of these alternative therapies that really don't have any effect and could harm the child. And there is a profit motive at work. I will tell you, I do not take any money from pharmaceutical companies, and I don't take any government money. The work I do is 100% funded by charitable contributions from foundations and from individuals who care about this topic. So for people who say that this is all about the profit motive, I would invite them to look at my old car and ask where the profit motive is.
Right, and that caller also said that there's no evidence that fluoride helps children's teeth, and of course that is completely wrong.
Yes.
Okay. All right, so let's go to the phones, and again, Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to The Source.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question for your two guests. My daughter's starting school. She is fully immunized. I just wanted to know, as a parent, if as she interacts with kids that are not immunized, is there anything I should be concerned about? Do they pose any risk or any threat to her?
All right, Mark, thanks for that question. So let's go to Dr. Mangla. Do you have can answer that?
That's a very good question, and that's why we look at what's called herd immunity. And herd immunity is you want to try to get as many in the population immunized, and so even those some that are not immunized, there's going to be this protection of individuals that are immunized. So in your case, when you're looking at your daughter is fully immunized, if someone is not immunized, the possibility of her getting infected will be very slim because she's already been protected. However, we have excellent reporting, and if someone is infected with a vaccine-preventable diseases, the local health departments will take action immediately. That individual will be removed from the school. We will initiate an investigation and make sure we identify all contacts and then proceed with the private providers to make sure that no one else gets infected.
Back to the phones. Cordy is on the line. Cordy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I just had a quick question for the experts out there. I kind of wanted to see what the commentary on this would be. I just graduated with my master's for speech therapy. And so this is fresh to us, all the students out there. And I wanted to see if it was a good compromise to maybe separate the vaccines and give it to our kiddos, our fresh out-of-the-womb kiddos, maybe spread them out over a month's time instead of giving it all to their little brand-new immune systems right away.
Okay.
I wondered if that would be a smart compromise, just to kind of, until everything's kind of figured out, you know?
Okay, Cordy, that's a good question. Anna Dragsback, president of the Immunization Partnership, spreading out those immunizations, not just hitting those kids with 14, 15 of them at once.
The immunization schedule has been developed by experts at the CDC and very prominent scientists to protect your child as early as possible. You are not going to overwhelm their immune system by giving them all those shots at once. They can take it. I promise you they can take it.
It's not about the reality. It's about the perception of it and trying to reassure parents.
Yes. And so a lot of parents come with this question and wonder if it's okay. And what I always tell them is, this immunization schedule is developed to protect your child as early as possible. If you're going to skip vaccines or spread them out, you need to ask what disease do you want your child going to
get. Anna Dragsback, the President Immunization Partnership, Dr. Anil Mangla, the Assistant Director of Health at Metro Health, thank you so much for joining us. This is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for listening.
The Source is a production of Texas Public Radio. Paul Flav produces the show. Oversight is provided by TPR Program Director Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR Web Editor, and production assistance comes from Catherine Dixon. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.